Heather O'Reilly, it is an honor to have you on. Welcome to Hope Solo Speaks. This is the 6th World Cup edition, and we've had some phenomenal guests, some absolutely outstanding, some of the best in the soccer industry. And I can't tell you how excited I am to have you on all the way from Qatar.
Yeah, thanks, Hope. Thanks for having me. I'm talking to you from Doha right now. I got here yesterday. I am here with FIFA. I'm part of a group called FIFA Legends, which I'm sure that you are as well, Hope.
No, I'm boycotted from all of our FIFA and US soccer family, but thank you.
What? You're still a FIFA legend.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know how it was decided, like who got the invite to come to this five-a-side tournament, but
a five-a-side tournament?
Yeah, it's called the FIFA Legends Cup. Well, five plus a keeper, so I guess six-a-side is what it turned out to be.
So there's actually goalkeepers, and I'm still not invited.
There was goalkeepers.
Well, who were the goalkeepers? Let's start with that.
Jorge Campos.
So it was men and women?
Men and women. Yeah. Men and women.
I love me some Jorge Campos, you know.
Yeah. He was injured, so he didn't play. So no, we definitely could have used you back there. Do you play much? Like, how's your shoulder feeling?
I'm old, and my shoulder, you know, it allows me to live. I probably could never dive again in my life, though. Let's be honest.
Okay.
Did you win the tournament? Because if you did, I mean, I would put my money on any of your teams when it comes to spotlighted.
Well, thank you. The tournament started today and we played three matches. They were only 2 times 15 minutes and we went, a win, 2 wins and a tie. So we're in like the crossover, game, and we'll be with the other side of the bracket, which is a little bit more difficult. This will be the South Americans and the Europeans. So they're playing right now. So,
the North American team has to win at something, right?
I know. Well,
you got to win the five-a-side.
If we can win this five, I mean, I don't know. It's pretty star-studded on the other side of the bracket. Like Cafu is here, Roberto Carlos.
Get out of here. Who's on your
Kaká.
Team?
My team is myself, Christine Lilly, Alexi Lalas, Stu Holden.
I feel really bad. I don't have a lot of faith in you guys.
Dwayne Rosario from Canada.
Well, that sounds really fun. The World Cup of small-sided games. You know, when I think back to you, your first time, not your first time, you had been a part of the national team for a long time, but I was older than you. And so I saw you as like this little kid, kind of, you know, this little kid came on the scene. She was a Tar Heel. She's from North Carolina. And we played small-sided games. And that is when I was like, holy shit, this kid is something else. She's unforgettable. Like, you couldn't forget you when you're on the small-sided pitch. Of course, on the big pitch also. But that shot of yours, I'll never forget. That was the first time that you just woke me up to the talent of these young kids coming through the system. I mean, you are the epitome of what US soccer wants to be, like the talent, the speed. You're obviously like incredible teammate. You played both offense and defense, your service into the box. Like, you were legit as a kid. And I still saw you as a kid. Can you believe that?
Yeah, no, I can see that, because I think it's like one of those things that, like, I don't know if you would agree, Hope, but sometimes I feel like we were like in this like time warp of our time, like with the US team, like people that you do view as kids. And I think that, like, even now, so I'm coaching at University of North Carolina with Anson. And I think that there's some times where, like, I still do feel like a kid, and he, I don't want to say treats me like a kid, but like, he's still my coach. Like, and now I'm trying to cross over to that, the new frontier of now being, you know, in media and, you know, on the sideline and things like that. And it's like, it is true. Like, you have to remind yourself, like, I'm a 37-year-old woman that's played, you know, 200 something times, like, for my national team. And I think because I did come onto the national team at a young age, like you're saying, sometimes your relationships stay sort of like the way that like when you met each other, you know? So I don't blame you for like sort of having that feeling. And
well, I don't ever want to disrespect you. That was my first memory of you. We obviously played in a lot of World Cups and Olympics together. Yeah. And I look at you as a equal fellow teammate, a woman, a hard working teammate and woman. And by the way, you know, I need to ask you what you've been up to in these last 3 years, because I know obviously that motherhood is very hard work, but maybe you can tell the listeners what you have been up to in the last 3 years or so.
Yeah. So I retired internationally from the US team in 2016. And I decided that, like, even though that chapter was, you know, closed, that I still wanted to enjoy playing the game. So I played over at Arsenal for a year and a half. And then I finished my career at North Carolina Courage in 2019. And so that was wonderful. The reason why I'm saying because there's a little bit of a extra part. When I was over at Arsenal, we weren't in Champions League. We never qualified when I had come there. We got third the year before, and only the top two teams at that point made Champions League. And so I went there. I was like, ah, they're not in Champions League, but it's okay. As you know, like, we've done a lot of cool stuff. Like, it was like not a big deal. I was like, well, maybe one of my goals is before I leave, I could get the team back to Champions League football. And unfortunately, we fell short in that again, and we got third again in the WSL. So my Champions League dream at that point was, you know, kind of over. And it was always this thing in the back of my head that kind of irritated me. Fast forward, though, it was the right decision for me to like come
home.
Well,
because you've done it all, right? You've won the College Cup, the Olympics, the World Cup, but you still don't have a Champions League title.
Exactly. So as you know, as a competitor, like things like that, like they just like eat at you. But, you know, I attempted to turn the page and went to North Carolina Courage, and we won, which was wonderful. And yeah, in 2019, you know, I was 34, and, you know, I felt like I was in a good place to retire, like, you know, had done it. As you noted earlier, like, I started at a young age. Like, I was definitely like a very young bloomer, I guess, or, you know, early bloomer, I guess you can say. So, you know, I had achieved these things early on, and then it was time to, you know, kind of look at the next things that me and my family and my husband, Dave, like, we wanted to have kids. And so, so I had two babies, one in 2020 and one in 2021, Will and is my oldest. He's 2.5, and Jack is a year old. And so to wrap up this roundabout way of saying it, I had the two babies. And then this year I got the itch to go back to the field to go after that Champions League dream. What started as like me just playing in this kick around game, being inspired by Arsene Wenger, who was my manager. He said, Heather, you are still very good. You should still play. And I said, well, thanks, Arsene, for saying that. I have two kids now. I've done it. It's done and dusted. He goes, oh, you should give it a try. And so I pulled up the UEFA website. I said, what team could I play on in Champions League so I could play Champions League football? And that took me over to Shelburne FC in Dublin, a completely amateur team in Ireland. Not even like they're not even allowed to pay players if they wanted to. And I told them my situation. I said, listen, like, this is just for Champions League. Like, I don't want any misconceptions. And they said, we would love to have you. So I went and played Champions League this last year. We lost in the second round, to be clear, but that's okay. that was kind of expected. But I scored in the first match. So I got my Champions League itch. I got a goal. You know, I'm not a Champions League winner. But I did it. So that was like a fun anti-retirement, let's say. So I think that my playing days are done. But you know what?
You're gonna be back in the NWSL by next season.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, so I'm a mom. I had this little comeback, but yeah. So besides that, I'm doing, you know, some TV work and some coaching. I think that those are the two avenues that I've put some energy into. And of course, being a mom of two, as you know, takes up a lot of time.
Of course. And who are you coaching? I thought you told me you were coaching boys at one point, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, good memory. So I've been the volunteer assistant with the University of North Carolina the last couple of seasons. unfortunately, we had a devastating result in the national final
versus UCLA. Yeah. I believe, if my memory serves me well, you guys had two different leads in the game.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oops. No, we not even two different leads. We were up 2-0 with 10 minutes to go.
Yes.
So we were up. We were up 2-0. Yeah, we were up 2-0 with 10 minutes to go. So it was a really tough one. We got very, very close. I mean, their goal came with 16 seconds left in the match on a corner kick. So, you know, it's obviously like devastating for the players. I would have loved to get a title for Anson. You know, it's been now 10 years since we've won at UNC. So that would have been nice. But what can you do? You got to move on in life. And I know the players are motivated already for next year. But besides being the volunteer assistant with UNC, in order to really investigate if I want to like pursue coaching at like a high level, I need to get reps as a head coach, you know, like clearly there are so many differences between being a head coach and assistant. So I just, you know, needed basically to like pick lineups, give the team talks, you know, do those session plans, lead the sessions. Like there's a lot that I think that I contributed at UNC, like no doubt. I was certainly like, as you can imagine, always jumping into the sessions if we needed a number or pulling the players aside, giving some advice and stuff like that. But it's way different being a head coach. So I picked up this under 15 NCFC boys team and I'm just having such a blast. It's only been about a month. So I'm sure I'll have my frustrations with them, but so far we're 1-1-1. On the, you know, in the results, but not that that matters. I think that they're developing, they're learning. And I really think I like working with young people. I think that that's my passion. I think, you know, I've enjoyed some other things that I've kind of dabbled in, but I think my heart always pulls me back to working with that sort of age group. My major at UNC was in middle school education. So I like the college age. I like, you know, the thought of coaching professionally, but you have to also just like listen to your heart and what speaks to you, I think. And I just really like working with young people. So we'll see how it goes working with the boys.
It sounds like you have the best of both worlds, though. I mean, you're coaching young boys, right? 14-year-old boys, which is incredible. I mean, they're being coached by this legend, you know, an Olympian, a World Cup winner. Somebody who's a great player in their own right, and they're being coached by, I mean, there's so many different intricacies in this. I think it's incredible that, you know, you're leading these young men. And I also think it's incredible that you're learning from one of the best when it comes to Anson Dorrance. You know, obviously I don't think there's any debate that Anson Dorrance is one of the best, or if not the best college coach in the game throughout history. Yeah. And you're learning from the best, and then you're given what you've experienced and your new set of knowledge, and you get to experience that with these 14-year-old boys. I think it's perfect. You know, it's the best of both worlds.
It's interesting right now. I think that you say that, cause it's like, there's so many things that you can pick from coaches. Like, okay, what does that person do that I really like? How would I change that? And you have to stay true to yourself. You know, I think that a lot of UNC and a lot of the US national team, like, is my line of thinking, like historically, what the, you know, the foundation of the team is about. Like we were laughing about the 5v5 games that like went to the death, you know, and like, of course, like that's me, but there are things that I want to like put my stamp on and develop my own coaching style. So it's been a fun, you know, couple of months, just kind of, thinking through that. And we'll see where the future goes with that, but I'm enjoying it for now.
All right. So back to Will and Jack real quick. What I've seen historically is that these incredible, phenomenal female athletes will have children, somehow get back in shape and actually be better than they were. So I want to know, and that's what we've seen with obviously our former captain, Chrissy Rampone, right? You know, get the babies out and then just get back in shape and be a World Cup girl. Phenomenal, incredible, fastest still on the team. So in shape, how does somebody like that do it? And now you've been through it. So I want to know, because I'm not back into playing shape after having two kids. How did you do it? Did you have a trainer?
It's a good question. Cause I think when Christy, you know, she probably felt like some pressure in order to like get back to the national team. Like that was, she was still playing. Mm-hmm. And I and you, you know, we kind of did it differently, I suppose. Like we were done, or so I thought, you know what I mean? We were done with our playing career. So we didn't have that same pressure to like, I got to get back, you know, at 3 months or 4 months, whatever it was. So, yeah, I feel pretty fit now. So I'm a year after, Jack just had his first birthday, like a couple of weeks ago around Thanksgiving. I am somebody that needs some sort of like a timeline else or like a goal. And so I actually ran the Boston Marathon, last April. So that was, thank you. So that was something like I needed a physical goal in order to, to put that pressure on yourself to come back. Else I would need a trainer because it's really, really hard to motivate yourself the same way that we are used to. So, I would not say that I'm as fit, but I'm in pretty good shape, but not good enough shape that I can play with the UNC team. I can, you know, play with my 15-year-old boys. And the good thing about the Chapel Hill community is that there's a lot of players around like all the time. There's a lot of people that come back into town to visit. There's a lot of coaches around. So we have a pretty solid, like lunchtime soccer league, we call it, which is, I would say usually around like 7v7 or so. But it's just a trash cans. It's just for fun. But I am like playing, you know, every couple of days. And I don't like going too long without playing soccer because I feel like that's my body's like equilibrium. Like that's where I feel really good and sort of, you know, we did it for so long. And so that's where I, like when I'm at least playing a few times a week, I feel like my body feels good.
Well, I play in my dojo with my husband, who obviously wasn't a soccer player, but that's about the level I'm at right now. I kick the ball with my American football playing husband against the kicking wall in our dojo. That's about
okay.
Well, but it's the time of our lives.
Yeah. You're a beast athlete, Hope. Don't put yourself, don't, you know, belittle your like athleticism either. If you wanted to, I'm sure you could play in our.
I'm not belittling. I have fun playing soccer with my kids and my husband now, but, how old is Will? When is his birthday?
His birthday is June 18th. So he is like two and a half.
Okay. So and our twins were born in March. Okay.
Okay.
So you're not quite pandemic babies just after the, well, I guess you were.
Oh no. Will was. Yeah. Will was in 2020.
Cause we were at the very start of the pandemic.
Yeah.
In March,
okay. So you were at the very beginning. Yeah. So yeah, it was a kind of a crazy time to have kids, as you know, like
it was. And Heather, I want to take the time to just thank you. And I want to thank you, you know, out in the open and publicly, because we went through a hard time during the pandemic, having twins. Obviously mm-hmm. it was a hard time for everybody, but, you were one of the few people who gonna make me cry on my own show who really reached out. You wanted to come. Bring your kids, give play dates with my kids while I was in rehab. You were there and it meant a lot. And I know we didn't take you up on the offer because Jeremy is very proud of a father and he was here every day while I was in rehab for 30 days. He was here every day. And he took a lot of pride in that. Truly an amazing man. But I just wanted to thank you because you were willing to do whatever it took to be there for my downfall and my family. So thank you, Heather.
Oh, well, thanks for saying that. I think that like, that's what teammates do. That's what teammates do.
That's what you hope teammates do.
Yeah. We were teammates for over 10 years, Hope. And like, maybe we're, you know, weren't like best friends necessarily, but like at the end of the day, like, I think all the things that we went through, like together on the national team, like, you know, you should have each other's backs. And I believe in that. And I'm just thrilled that the kids are good and healthy and you seem to be really healthy and happy. And I'm glad that you guys got through that storm.
Yeah, it was the pandemic was tough for everybody. And then you add twins to it. Oh goodness. Yeah, it was a tough year, but I don't think I have any more pride than being a mother of my two beautiful kids, even more so than winning that World Cup with you in 2015.
I know. I mean, isn't it amazing? Like, well, even still, like I'm saying like, okay, I do some TV stuff. I do some coaching. It's fine. I'm like, nothing beats playing. And as soon as I say like nothing beats playing, I'm like, the only thing that beats playing is being a parent, in my opinion. Like it is, being a parent is so, so special. And I know that you feel that too. So how are the twins doing? What are like what are their little personalities like right now?
Oh, well, Vittorio's being a little bit of a bully and Lozen is the sweetest little girl in the world, but they play well together. But, you know, they're learning to share. Their twins are almost 3 years old. They'll be three in March. So 2.5+ years old. So they're right in that stage where everything is theirs and they want it to themselves and try and take it and snatch it. So we're teaching a lot of manners. They say please and thank you all the time. My little girl now is saying, Mama, I love you so much. It's like melts my heart every time she says it.
Oh, it's the best. It's best.
I can't get enough cuddles from these kids. But of course, like my energy is completely gone because all of it goes to them. But anyways, I know everybody wants to hear us former soccer players talking about parenting. And I'm glad to have an episode on that. But I did at the very top of the show, I actually wanted to take the time to really pay the respects to both of our good friend Grant Wall. You know, I think Grant and you see everybody speak about him now, but I always knew that he was kind of the moral compass to the soccer community. And he was very kind to me my entire career, kind to everybody that I saw him around, but he held soccer accountable. He held US soccer accountable. He held coaches accountable and he held players like us accountable. He truly was that moral compass. And I just wanted to take the time to really reminisce about Grant Wall. Maybe you can share with us some of your interactions and the stories that you remember. And I have plenty of my own. So I was hoping we could take the time to really just show our respect and reminisce about Grant Wall. Obviously, he is a huge loss to the soccer community.
Absolutely. I think, it's good to, take some time to celebrate this amazing man. I mean, what a bizarre, and crazy couple of weeks it's been and sad. So Grant, like you know, I just started to have a relationship with him as a journalist, you know, post game, would always see this guy around, would see his articles pop up. I knew that he was always special because I remember him doing like a cover story for SI with Mia. And then he did a cover story for SI with LeBron. And I kept seeing this name pop up, covering these really incredible stories. So I knew that he was obviously the guy in soccer journalism but always just had like a professional relationship with him while I was a player. And he actually did a really nice piece. He came to Rio for the Olympics and he did a nice piece on me when I served in the alternate role, which was, you know, clearly like not the role that I wanted in that event. And it was a really challenging time for me. But he did a really like lovely piece about me being there and trying to help the team. And so I'll always like be really grateful that he saw value in doing an article on players that weren't even like on the pitch. So that's sort of when I started to, you know, grow a, you know, I guess a fondness of him and our relationship sort of was morphing from being a player to being more of a peer. And we didn't work together a ton, but we worked together a little bit with Fox in 2015. And then since then, you know, I've just, we've been on a couple different panels and things together. So just professionally, our lives have kind of intertwined. And actually just a few weeks ago, I was just on the fence if I wanted to come over here to Qatar, obviously for personal reasons, starting, I think, just with my family. Like it's just, it's tough to be away. And when I have these two small kids and then obviously like, there's conflicting emotions around this World Cup, being here in Qatar, how it was won, you know, how it was named to be in Qatar 12 years ago. And, you know, everything that's gone on with the stadium building, you know, the treatment of LGBT in this, you know, in this country. So there was a lot of conflicting emotions, and I didn't really know if I, you know, was interested in going. And actually the last interaction that I had with Grant was an email exchange a couple of weeks ago. And I just basically wrote him like a one or two liner, like, how's it going over there? I'm sitting on an invite from FIFA. Like, should I come? Should I not come? Like, what's the vibe? And it was, I think, interesting because like I wrote him just like a one or two sentence email, and he writes me back this like thorough, probably like four or five paragraph, like took so much time for me. And like I said, like we were, it's not like we were best buds or anything, but he really carved out a really thoughtful and kind email response, well thought out, you know, talked about his experience over here. And at the end was, I think, encouraging that I should think about coming in order to, you know, to like, yeah, be the change, or to like, see what, you know, where I can make impact for good, and be a change agent rather than just, you know, where I'd be right now, I guess, on my couch, like on Twitter, like complaining about things that I disagree with, you know. It's, and so I, yeah, that's my last memory of Grant, is basically like me taking 2 seconds to blast him a question, and him being like so thoughtful and kind in his response. And we were meant to get a, you know, get a coffee here when and if I did come. And so, yeah, just, and even, you know, just passing the media center here in Qatar, like as soon as I walked past it, I thought of Grant. Like, I just associate him so much with these tournaments, and, yeah, really kind of surreal and crazy time that I think a lot of people in our world are still processing, and my condolences, of course, to his family and those loved ones.
It's crazy to me that your, I guess, relationship with Grant really evolved in 2016 when you were an alternate. My relationship with him started at the beginning of my career. So my first actual World Cup when I'm starting was in 2007. And obviously you were there on that team, and you know what happened, where I got benched for the semifinal against Brazil. And I spoke out against the decision to be benched. And he was really the only, and you're used to, you know, forgive me for saying this, but this is the truth. You're used to some pretty shitty journalists when it came to women's soccer, especially at the time. I mean, we're used to the Bo Durs of the world, the laughable Bo Durs. You know, you're going,
like Bo.
Well, you can like Bo all you want, but in terms of integrity, in terms of the way they write this speech, Grant Wall is on a whole different level than a Bo Durr who tweets out stupid shit all the time. Anyways, we were filled with really irresponsible journalism, I think, on the women's game for a long time. Not just irresponsible journalism, but they weren't professional. And then there was Grant, and he just rose above everybody else. And I remember there were so many times where I didn't do interviews during Olympics or World Cups, and I'd walk through the mix zone, and out of respect, I would look at Grant just to be like, hey, I'm not doing any interviews, and you know this, but if I were to do an interview, it would be with you. And I would give him the nod of respect. And in 2007, when I did get benched, he was the one that was like, there's more to this story. Let's actually peel the layers back and figure out, you know, I lost my father. I lost my best friend prior to the tournament. I'd been a starting goalkeeper for 3 years. All the media wanted to jump to the conclusion that Brianna Scurry and I hated one another, but really he was like, they actually really respect and love one another. I had a great relationship with Brianna Scurry, but this is what he did. He found the deeper layers of the stories. And he held everybody accountable. And those are my first memories with him, was in 2007. And he introduced himself to my entire family and to my coaches at the University of Washington, Leslie and Amy, treated everybody with respect. And he pushed for excellence. And he just really wanted to understand every individual. So whatever story was the headline, he wanted to find out so much more. He always knew there were more layers to the story. And that's why I respected him. And And, you know, I can't imagine, you know, I didn't get inducted into the Hall of Fame last year because I had my personal issues going on, and I delayed it to this year. And I always thought Grant was the only person that I would speak to write about my Hall of Fame induction. And man, it feels like a huge personal loss, but that's selfish. You know, Celine, when I was trying to get pregnant in 2016, before we went to Brazil, Jeremy and I were trying to have kids, trying to get pregnant. And I was very open with Grant about that because he knew that I had problems with Zika. Like, I didn't know if I should go and put my body at risk, my family's potential body at risk. I didn't know what to do. And he put me in touch with Celine, and we got on a Zoom call. I saw her, and she took the time, carved that time out of her day to talk to a nervous Olympian. She doesn't even care about sports, but this is how much it meant to Grant to make me feel comfortable that he put his wife on a Zoom call, you know, and she obviously had a lot to do in her life. But she took the time. And so to not have Grant and Celine at my next year's Hall of Fame is really difficult. But I do hope that he rests in peace, and my condolences goes out to his entire family as well, and the soccer community as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. And if they're, you know, like, I know that it was probably 40 years sooner than we would have liked Grant to leave this planet to be doing what he loved to do at a World Cup, and surrounded by, you know, people in the industry that just adored him. Yeah, I mean,
he did go out doing what he loved.
Exactly.
Rest in peace, Grant Wall. At this point, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with you shortly.
Buck O'Neill dedicated his life to teaching us about the heroes of the Negro Leagues and demonstrating that you could get further in life with love than you could with hate. Now is our opportunity to say thank you to this legendary man. Join the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum as we celebrate Buck's long overdue induction into the National Baseball Hall of Fame by supporting our Thanks a Million Buck campaign. It's an effort to raise at least $1 million by fans donating a buck or more in support of the NLBM. Remember, every buck counts. To donate, visit thanksamillionbuck.com.
All right, Heather, let's talk about the World Cup. I've had, you know, this is the sixth edition. You're my sixth guest during the World Cup. So we've had a lot of debate about soccer in America, how the men's team did. So I would like to get your quick analysis before we talk about the final standing two teams. I would like to get your take on how the American side did.
It's a great question. I would say I come away with the feeling that it was a successful World Cup for our guys. I think to come out of the group was a big goal. I don't think that that was a given, considering, you know, the other quality sides in our group. So I think we got out of the group. I think a good result against England, I think, is always good for American confidence. So many of those English guys are names that a lot of Americans know. So it's just like, I think a positive feeling for the country that like our young team can really, truly not only hang with, they probably outplayed, you know, many of the guys that we see week in and week out in the Premier League. So I came away with it as a positive event. Obviously I'm a, you know, ruthless competitor. So it would have been good to get a little bit farther, but I think obviously, you know, everybody's looking at 26 as being, the event that we can really, you know, make a run in. Like, I think that by 2026, like being a home tournament, having a core group of guys that have been there, I don't think we should have expectations any less than, you know, quarterfinals for our guys. The way that I sort of looked at, you know, their game against the Netherlands, it was just like, it just seemed to me like this was a top 10 opponent in the Netherlands playing against a top 20 opponent in us. And like, that's just kind of the difference of the quality. Like, that's just, and there's nothing embarrassing about saying that. Like, we are a top 20 team in the world, which is respectable. And in order to yeah, we gotta make some gains in order to become, you know, a top 10 team. And that might be a boring answer, but that's kind of like what I saw from the group. Really like Tyler Adams. I think he had a wonderful tournament.
You know what, Hale? I don't think your answer is boring at all. I think it's just simply to the point. We're more like a 20 ranked team, and we still haven't broken into the top 10. Right. And there's a difference, and you're going to see the difference on the pitch. You obviously see the difference. I love Tyler Adams too. But then, man, I just do not understand it. Like, I can't understand how you don't track back in a World Cup match. You know, it's a knockout round game. That's something maybe, I mean, you're a coach. I don't think it's something you coach. I think that's in the heart. Like, you get back for your players, for your team. It's a knockout round game. I just don't understand that. You know, the silly fouls in the back, it makes me question Berhalter a little bit. I know he's done great with the team, got them qualified. They went far. They played great against England. But it's the little things, and you know this, it's the little things that at the, you know, when you're playing better teams, that will allow you to have success. We've seen that. We lost to Japan in 2011 when we had two different leads in that particular game.
Yeah.
And we lost, and it had to do, and I'm at fault for that because I got up too quickly. I went down. I don't know if you remember this, but I went down late in the game. I went knee to knee with a Japanese player on a 1v1. And I was rattled. My knee really, really hurt. And I was really rattled. It was bleed. I thought I blew my knee out. And so I was foggy, you know, and then all my defenders around me were kind of like worried about me. And I got up, and I should have stayed down and made sure everybody was okay. But I got up because I was tough, you know, and I got up, and I didn't really communicate as much as I should have to Rachel Buehler and to all these players around me, being like, we're fine, get your head in the game, mark the fuck up, we're good, we're good. I didn't do that. I got back into the goal, and there was a corner kick, and they scored off the corner. And I feel like I was responsible for managing the game at that point. But managing the game is something you can't overlook. And I'm not sure that Greg Berhalter really taught those intricacies that is needed to get to the next level.
Yeah. I mean, definitely a lot of people would say that a coach on the national team shouldn't stay for more than a cycle. And if Berhalter got him to the, you know, a solid point, and it's time for somebody else to take the reins, like, I wouldn't be shocked to see that happen. I think if I was, you know, like, making those decisions, I think that he, I don't see anything fireable in what he did. Yeah. So maybe he learns from it,
right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're talking about a very costly error let's just talk about that track back goal. That was a costly error. I think obviously he had some management challenges. We've kind of come out and heard a little bit about, you know, Gio Reyna and things that, you know, went on the lead up to the game. So I don't know. I don't see anything like fireable in the performance or in anything that he's done. I think he's done a nice job. I would keep him around for another cycle, but I also wouldn't be shocked if that's not the decision that's made. It's a tough business, you know?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, he got these players inspired. You know, he is looked at as a hero right now in the United States. So four more years, you look back, you watch every game, you look where you made your errors, and you learn from it. And hopefully we will be a top 10 contender. I would say more than that. You said quarterfinals.
Yeah. I mean, I said quarterfinals, and then I'm saying, yeah, top 10. So yeah, you're right to call me out on that. Like, is top 10 good enough? Like, 'cause quarterfinals is better than top 10. So, can we be a quarterfinal contender in 2026? I think is a achievable yet like lofty goal, and I'm excited to see them chase it.
I like that, achievable but lofty, and we still may see the men win a World Cup before we die. Ayo, I mean, we're not that old, right? It might happen.
Well, I hope so. I think it definitely, you know, it definitely can happen.
So talk to me about this final, because man, I have so much to ask you, and I know we're running out of time, but I want to know how much you've enjoyed this World Cup. If you have any, you know, family traditions where you watch the World Cup. And then I want to know who your favorite player has been, who your favorite team has been watching. And then I can't wait to hear about your thoughts on Sunday's final.
Yeah, no, I've definitely really enjoyed the World Cup. I have to say, like, having two small kids and some of these game times have been like difficult to catch every game. Like I would be lying if I said that I've watched 64 game or 63, I guess it's now. But obviously, you know, I caught all the, you know, every minute of the US's games and further along, you know, have tried to see as many as I can. I mean, I would love to see Messi go out. I'm a big Messi fan. I mean, I think that he has just brought so much joy to the world throughout the last couple of decades. So, I mean, I had said Argentina was going all the way.
That was your team.
That was my team.
Wow.
You can hear it on BBC. I do a podcast with BBC World Service.
Well, I'm not surprised you're a Messi fan.
Yeah. I mean, who isn't, right? But
did you say you do a podcast?
Yeah. I do a weekly podcast with World Football. Pat Nevin is another former player that's on it pretty much every week with me. And he said France was going to win it. So we're coming out looking like right now. Well, one of us will be more of a genius than the other one. But I think I've been pleasantly surprised about France, because I thought that like their injuries, I was like devastated when Kanté couldn't play. Because he's just like, yeah, I mean, what of like just the spine of that team. And I thought that they had maybe like too many holes.
I was devastated when Benzema couldn't play.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, and to talk about players that I've like loved, like Benzema's out and like Giroud has like completely stepped up. I was watching him yesterday. It was the only live game I got to, France, Morocco. What an atmosphere that was. But Giroud is 36 years old and he was like just covering ground, like fit, pressing when he needed to. He's obviously scored some fabulous goals in the tournament. So he's somebody that I like, you know, obviously he's 36, he's seasoned veteran. But he's like somebody I look at, I'm like, he's one of the best players in the tournament, like Griezmann as well.
Griezmann's been playing incredible. I can't believe it.
He's been playing amazing. Like yesterday, even like with the ball, of course, making really good choices, but without the ball, he's just like works. Their front line was just like really working well together and all their pressing movements. And, you know, Mbappe, I think, brings out maybe the best in his teammates. I don't know, but they didn't show too many holes yesterday, obviously. You know, they are in the final. So,
well, I don't think they played well against England, to be honest. So I think they had their game that was not on par for their ability, which is it's sometimes good to have and you still win and you still go on in the tournament. So yep. I imagine that France will bring their best game, because I wasn't impressed in their match versus England. And what do you think about that Harry Kane missed penalty? What do you have to say about that?
It's tough. I mean, you know, you can look back, obviously, in hindsight, it's like, should the same player take a penalty a second time in a game?
Kelly Smith would say yes.
Yeah.
Everybody is writing. England is writing on Harry Kane to put that away every time.
I don't think I have a problem with a player taking another one. I mean,
I think I might.
Really?
Think about it. Think about our World Cups, right? I'd be nervous for Carly Lloyd to step up the second time. It's like, put it away the first time, then maybe Abby comes in and takes one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I feel you on that. It's a lot of pressure on one player.
We'd have to ask Carly if she's done that. I feel like Pino has definitely taken back-to-back penalties in the same game. I seem to remember.
Very true. But she did in 2019.
Yeah. I mean, hey, you got to have like the ability to go freaking both ways and down the middle. Like you have to be able to do it all, like in order to be that person that's
but
called
over
again.
The goal. Hail, was that?
Yeah, no,
was it,
again,
right?
It's a moment of that he'll regret the rest of his life. Clearly. We talked about the costly error from from Tyler Adams as well. It's like, they'll replay that over and over and over. And it's like, just this one moment where he just let his concentration slip. I mean, wonderful player, wonderful leader, seemingly like a great guy. I've always heard wonderful things about Harry Kane. And so it's just like the tournament was theirs. I thought that the tournament was theirs. It was there for the taking for England. So definitely disappointing. A moment of not concentrating. And he let that slip.
But this final on Sunday at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern between two powerhouses when it comes to the game. Like I can't imagine a game that I've been more excited for in a very long time. France versus Argentina. You have star power with Mbappe and with Lionel Messi. I mean, two of the best players right now in the game. Yes, I'm a Ronaldo fan and Portugal was my team, but I always bet and go with my heart, not with my brain. My brain told me France was going to win it, by the way. So I will say that, but my heart wanted Portugal. The star power, you know, I mean, Lionel Messi, Mbappe, do you think we will still be talking about Mbappe 10 years from now, the way we talk about Lionel Messi?
I think that his stats might be as good. I don't know if he will be as revered. I don't know if his playing style is very graceful. I was actually thinking that like he reminded me a lot of Thierry Henry, like in his best, like in his Arsenal days, like just so fast, so graceful, like good decision making, good passing ability, but like maybe not the same like get people out of their seat kind of, you know, like admiration that Messi has. He's put this spell on the entire globe and he's made people fall in love with his style. I think maybe it is because he's like a smaller guy and like there's a little bit of like David versus the Goliath kind of like you know, people want to get behind that. And so I think that their stats might be similar. Mbappe is like, he's incredible. And you know, he's still so young. But will there be another like love affair with him the way there is with Messi? I don't know if that's, I don't know if that's in the cards, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I really didn't think Lionel Messi was going to get his Cinderella send off. You know, I didn't see it, but now that he's gotten to the semifinal, they moved past the semifinal. They're in the final. That was the best game I've seen him play in a World Cup. I mean, he was off the ground running his butt off. He usually likes to walk around, you know, conserve energy, all of that. But he was getting off the ground after tackles. He was making plays. He was running. And I'm like, all right, if you pull that off in the semifinal, I think there's another level in the final. And so I truly think this is going to be one of the best sporting events that we've seen in our lifetime come Sunday. France, Mbappe, Griezmann, Giroud versus Lionel Messi and company. I mean, it's going to be fun. 10 o'clock. Are you going to the game?
Well, it's funny that you asked that because I have a ticket. I'm here. I could go to the game, but my family back home, my mom and dad and brothers, December 18th has been like circled on the calendar for a very long time that was our family Christmas day. And I think family comes first in this instance. And I think I will be going home the day before the final. Dave thinks
love
I'm crazy.
Your family. Like, love your family.
I know.
But hey, come on.
Do you think I missed? Should I miss the flight? Oh,
can we move family Christmas to December 20th?
Maybe? What's wrong with the 20th?
What's wrong with the 20th? Like,
well, all right. Well, I appreciate
come
your
on,
hey, family. I know.
Your family will forgive you at some point in time. And tell your family hello, by the way.
Yes. Oh, well, thank you. Tell your mother.
Well, can I get a prediction before you get off here?
Yeah. I think there's going to be goals. I think there's going to be goals scored. Let's go 2-2 and then Argentina wins in penos.
I've been messing with the 2-2 score line, but I'm going to go. Oh, I feel like a 3-2 game. That's what everybody wants, right? Goals, goals, goals. I don't know. Yeah. It's hard for me to say Argentina. Like I can't even get it out of my mouth.
Yeah. Well,
no, should I say 3-2 France? I'm going to go 2-2 penalties.
2-2 penalties. Same with me.
And France wins in penalties.
Okay. Well, it's going to penalties. I have Argentina winning. I just want to see Messi like get this monkey off his back with the penalties. But I mean, yeah, he's playing amazing. So maybe he can get it done in regular time. We'll see.
You heard it right here from one of the best in the game. She is a legend in her own right. Man, Heather O'Reilly, thank you so much for coming on Hope Solo Speaks. I love you. I miss you. I wish we were still teammates.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're teammates in life though, right?
Teammates for life, sis.
Yes.
All right. Keep up the good work and good singing. You seem great.
Hope Solo Speaks is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
SiriusXM Podcasts.